welcome to Comic Talk Today for Thursday, June 21st, 2018. And yes, it is time for some therapy, and I don't have a creator on this week. Instead, I have one of the most therapeutic people in the world, my podcasting partner from the Nerd Legion podcast, Nick Wetmore.
Hello, but I will disagree with you. We're creating rainbows and unicorns over on Nerdy Legion every week of the year.
All right, fine. Fair enough. Not a comic creator. But we do create comedy on that podcast.
We try. It's sort of painful, but every once in a while.
We succeed. That's what we make each other chuckle. Yeah, that's all that matters, right? We make each other laugh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Nick, welcome to the show. You kind of were on before, but not really, and that thing never came out because the sound sounded like garbage. But you were actually the very first person to test out the trivia challenge with me.
That sounds like par for the Nerdy Legion course. Bad sound quality? Yes, check.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad you're here. We're going to talk. I do have a trivia challenge for you.
Ooh.
I haven't done one in a couple weeks. But we'll be doing one at the end of this episode.
Okay.
I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
So the day this episode comes out is June 21st, which means Batman 49 just came out yesterday. I have not read it. I'm like 5 issues behind on Batman. We're not going to talk about why. The people know. The people know.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to discuss it. Batman 50 is coming out in 2 weeks.
The big one.
July the 4th. The day of independence in the United States. It is a big one. You said it. It's the 50th issue, so that's big. Tom King's been on the whole time. Good for that guy. But we have a wedding. The wedding of Batman and Catwoman.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me explain a little further. This is not the wedding of Bruce Wayne and Selina Kyle. This is the wedding of Batman and Catwoman. Now, my question to you, Mr. Nick Wetmore, is, let's be real. They're not getting married, are they?
I mentioned on, I believe it was Twitter. It could have been our Discord private channel. But I enjoy Tom King quite a bit. I enjoy his creators with him quite a bit. This is a big event. But as soon as I heard it isn't Bruce and Selina, for whatever reason, it's Batman and Catwoman, I couldn't help but ask, is this an Elseworld title? Is this a dream? Is this actually going to happen? Because Catwoman starts off on her own title pretty much after that, right?
Correct. Her book comes out, I think, 2 weeks after Batman 50.
Yeah. So if it is a dream and Selina wakes up from this dream, man, would I be disappointed and pissed.
You think that's what it is? All right. So since you said that, what if you're right? What if it is a dream? What if everything that we've seen over the last 50 issues takes place as Batman is riding that plane in issue one?
Yeah, in a pocket universe.
I would be so
mad.
All
in his head.
I would be so mad.
It's almost like, and I certainly hope it isn't this. I mean, I just hate it when any movie, book, comic does the dream thing. It's hard to pull off. It usually feels like it's a MacGuffin or a cheat or something that's just so out of left field and unexpected that they didn't know how to actually wrap up such storyline.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I mean,
I hate to say it, even if it's done perfectly, but it's still a dream or a pocket universe or whatever. As a Batman fan, wouldn't you feel cheated for the last 4 years? Like, sure, you got great stories. Okay, given. But still, it's like you brought me on this emotional roller coaster ride basically for nothing because nothing ever changed. And I hate to say it, if somebody did wake up from a dream, I would hope that that's the creator's last issue that they're going to do. Because at that point, if you're just pulling the wool over everyone and thumbing your nose at all your readers, pretty rude, as well as unless you're just leaving. And just like, see ya, good luck, good luck with issue 51, because I'm out, peace out. If you're not dropping the microphone and walking away, then what are you doing?
Well, which that's not the case, right? I think Tom King said that he's going to be on the book for 100 issues.
That's what he hopes to be,
That's what he hopes to be. And I mean, it seems to be that he will be on for that long, right? I mean, the book is critically acclaimed,
Everyone loves Tom King. He was just on Seth Meyer. I watched it. He was freaking hilarious.
Yes, he is.
And, you know, of course, I listen to Gotham by Geeks. He's been on there a couple times because he's friends with Chris and Daryl. And he's funny there. And he's a nerd just like we are. But, oh, man, I'm worried about this wedding, Nick. I'm really worried about it.
Same here.
I'm really
unless
worried
it's going it. Unless it's going to go like all of the other weddings. But the problem with the other weddings, it was never like Spider-Man's marrying Mary Jane. You know, the closest thing that you got was what, Reed Richards and Sue Richards?
Okay, yeah. I mean, like, I could see the Peter and Mary thing. Because she was around since pretty much the beginning.
But it wasn't, my point is, it wasn't Spider-Man. It was Peter Parker.
Oh, right, yes. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's the thing, right? So,
but
I mean.
But you also don't want that, do you? Like, every one of those marriages, like Peter and Mary Jane getting married. Why would any villain, for any reason, show up to break up that wedding? But they all do. Right. Just like, what?
Dude, it's like when I watch The Flash on the CW. Like, everybody knows Barry Allen's The Flash. Like, what does he even wear a mask?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And, like, as soon as they introduce a new character, like, the second issue or episode they show up, it's like, hey, I have a secret to tell you. I'm The Flash. Mm-hmm. And they're like, what?
Well, the only caveat with that is it has to be a good-looking person coming on board.
Well, it's a CW. They're all good-looking.
Yeah. If it's, like, a grandfather, guess what? That person's not going to learn Barry's The Flash. But if it's a hot-looking person, oh, yeah, three episodes in, they're going to learn Barry's The Flash, of course.
Like Kitty Lotz.
Oh, boy.
I had to throw that in there for you. But
her chin clef learned of Barry's identity three hours before actual character learned.
That's
identity.
Shame on you. She's beautiful.
She is. She's a darling.
If I had made it to C2E2, Ronnie and I were going to make her read out of the phone book.
And sadly, you didn't make it to C2E2, and Ronnie just talked a big game, but nothing happened.
Yeah. It's okay. Maybe next year.
Maybe next year.
But yeah, I was thinking about it, and you know. The only thing that's really bothered me about this whole thing, like, I think I can be okay if it's a dream, right? And the only reason I say that it could be a dream is Tom King does that a lot, right? He did that with Omega Man in some respects. He did that with Vision a little bit. Stuff he's doing in Mr. Miracle almost seems like that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, I could see it here. But, you know, there's other elements, right? So he's doing that Heroes in Crisis miniseries. I think it's a 6-issue book where Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman create the sanctuary that's just run by robots and holograms. And if a hero wants, like, therapy, they go to this place where they can just forget about things, work through their personal issues and whatever. And then crazy shit happens because everyone dies. But that's not a spoiler, by the way. That's in the synopsis for the book. And I wonder if some of that isn't maybe a setup out of this wedding thing too, right? I mean, I've been reading Batman for a long time, and I've gone back from the beginning and started reading that stuff. And Catwoman to me has never seemed like the person that would want to settle down in any way, shape, or form.
No. Yeah, I would say the same thing about Bruce, but I would say it even more about Selina.
She
is so uber independent.
Extremely.
So to see her this way is very strange, but interesting.
Yeah. And the thing that bugs me though, the one thing that bugs me is how they keep saying the first time that they're getting married. And let me tell you, Nick, that's not true. In fact, they've been married 4 times before. It's true. Matter of fact, I think Ronnie and I had this talk a couple weeks ago on Discord. Because he was talking about the wedding of the century, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, they're getting married. And I had to point out to one of my favorite Batman Catwoman wedding issues, DC Superstars number 17, which also happens to be the origin story of the Huntress. Because if you remember, I don't know if you do or not, but back in the day, before all timelines got retconned and changed and this and that and the other, Huntress was Bruce and Selina's daughter. That's no longer the case, if I'm correct. I think they changed that a few years ago, but that was their daughter. And, so that's the wedding issue because it's the origin story for Huntress. And so we see the Batman Catwoman wedding and it was freaking awesome. Freaking awesome. Trying to think what else there was, and that would have been in continuity, kind of, Because mm-hmm. that was Earth 2, Batman and Catwoman. So I don't know where we're – are we still in Earth 2? No, we're in Earth Prime. This whole multiverse is confusing. But there was an Elseworlds story, Catwoman, Guardian of Gotham, in which Batman's origin story is put on Catwoman. So her parents are Thomas and Martha Kyle, and they get killed, and she inherits money and becomes Catwoman. And anyways, she and Bruce Wayne get married in that story. That was in Elseworlds by Doug Minch. The Man, the Myth, the Legend.
I have not read that, and that sounds really interesting.
You should check it out.
I will.
One that I'm surprised you have not mentioned is JLA number 8 by the one and only, the incomparable Grant Morrison.
He is dreamy.
He is dreamy. And that one actually was kind of a dream.
Yeah.
So, whatever.
They've done a lot to Batman through the years. So would I be surprised if he's strapped to a chair, like a Clockwork Orange chair, and they're putting like hypnotism drops in his eyes and making him believe that there's a history going on that isn't actual history? Yeah, I could believe that, sure.
So I don't know if you listened to today's episode or not, but one of the listeners asked a question about favorite runs, and I was talking about some of my favorite Batman stuff, and and I mentioned Bob Haney, and what you just described, and thinking back on Grant Morrison, maybe that's why I love Grant Morrison so much, because Haney did that crazy shit that Grant Morrison does, except Morrison does it like in a serious tone, right?
Yeah.
But it's way out there. Bob Haney's like just doesn't give a shit. He just throws stuff out there.
Yep.
And it doesn't make sense, but you know what? Whatever. It tells a good story.
The greatest thing about Haney, he doesn't explain hardly anything, nor does he really have to.
Yeah.
You just it's a roller coaster ride you jump on.
Yeah, yeah. See, I wonder...
Where Grant Morrison will try to, like, do pseudoscience to try to explain away, like, this is what I'm trying to do. Which I love. I hope you mentioned JLA's run.
Oh, of course. Okay. Oh, wait,
Tower of Babel?
I did not. I did not put it on there.
Tower of Babel's really good, and I know that's not Morrison. It's Wade, but still.
Dude, I didn't even think about my answer. Like, as I was recording, I was just, here's my top five. I think two were Batman runs, maybe. Yeah, because I did the Jim Starlin, Aparo Batman stuff with KG Beast, Death in the Family. I did the Morrison Batman. I did the Brave and the Bold Bob Haney. Venditti Exo and Jeff Smith Bone.
That's a good list.
Yeah, it's a pretty good list. I thought so.
You sent that listener down a nice road right there if they wanted to purchase some of that stuff.
Absolutely. Matter of fact, Ronnie asked a question, which he didn't ask until I was done recording, but I'm going to answer it next week, and it's a really freaking good one.
Oh, good.
And it also has to do with runs. So, but
I like that.
Since we're on this like Bob Haney, dreamy stuff, Morrison stuff, what the hell is this Tom King Batman wedding thing? It actually gave me a thought that I hadn't thought about before.
Mm.
Do you think that maybe the fact that we have serialized stories going from issue to issue kind of ruins what we expect from a comic? Does it give us too much expectation for a comic is what I mean? Because think about like...
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. What? Okay, go ahead.
I already have an answer to that.
Oh.
The answer is... Absolutely yes.
Yes.
You look at Haney, you look at any 60s or 70s writer, they had to tell a complete story in less pages, as well as usually the first page is a recap page.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to tell a full story. Now, do I like long runs? Like right now I'm reading Spider-Man Clone Saga for the first time. Huge run, but could, to be honest with you, could that be condensed down by half of the issues and you still get the main points across? Probably. A lot of writers, especially modern writers now, it feels like they're writing for trades. Every story has to be at least four issues, if not six, possibly eight.
Yeah.
And it's a little frustrating. I want people to come in, and I mean, the last time that was happening was, at least what I can remember, especially for the big two, was when Mark Waid was doing, what was it, Brave and the Bold? Where each story was usually one, if not two issues
mm-hmm,
long.
Mm-hmm, yep.
And those were fantastic stories. You don't need to decompress everything to make it a trade. You just don't. And to be honest with you, as a reader, I would rather like to get two stories in a trade than one long one that there's a lot of filler. And I hate to say it, sometimes there is a lot of filler.
There is. You're right. Yeah, I think about, you know, like people don't realize when Batman came out, it wasn't like one story, right? There were three or four stories per issue. And it wasn't until like, oh God, I want to say late 50s that they started doing one issue per story. But even then, what they were doing was the self-contained story. And you're right. I think I love that a lot more. I think that, that's maybe part of the reason why you and I really love Elseworlds stories is they're all self-contained, right? Even if they're doing a miniseries, it's just that story. Right?
And some people complain about like DC Presents or Brave and Bold, like those 96-page spectacular or giant issues. And a lot of people will say, yeah, but two of the three stories are reprints.
Right.
I got to for you. They could do that today and charge $2 more, even though there's two reprinted stories in there, but you're getting 100 pages. I would still buy it because guess what? Those reprinted stories I might have already read, but I guarantee you I haven't read them probably in 5-10 years. So they'll feel new. And it's a great way. Like you always hear from creators, how do we get new people into comic books? Well, guess what? You don't do a 42-issue run of Clone Saga. You offer each story, like Stan Lee always says, each comic book could be a new reader's first comic book. You can offer 100-page with one specific new story and then offer like, oh, it's a Scorpion story. Oh, here's an 8-page story explaining Scorpion's origin, and then here's a reprint of like a Marvel team-up with Scorpion. Like that's new reader friendly, and I hate to say it, I would love to read that. All of a sudden I'm getting a new art writer and artist as well as like Steve Ditko doing the Scorpion. Yeah, sign me up.
Yeah, but you know how I feel about Stan Lee's little saying. I don't agree with it completely.
And I understand.
Yeah. I think the problem with it, right, is a lot of writers, when they have that mindset, they end up making every story too dumbed down for regular readers in order to kind of appease the new reader. And the story suffers as a result, right? I think the right way to do it would be to find a way to reintroduce each character within the story that's taking place or within the dialogue itself. And that's generally not how that's done. So for me, the argument kind of falls apart, probably more because of writing talent than the actual philosophy that Stan Lee tried to put out.
But I can agree.
And, you know, at the same time, to go with your point, when Stan Lee said that, they were doing the self-contained one-issue, one-and-dones. Right?
But you look at Batman, like, how long of a hiatus, like, did the Joker have?
Ooh, like they 30 just, years.
Yeah, like writers were not thinking, ooh, it's been a while since we've had Joker in. Ooh, it's been a while since Two-Face has been in. I should bring him back.
Well,
like how would they ever know that like the audience, the reading audience is clamoring for a Joker story? There was no way of them to know that except a letter to the editor.
Part of the problem with that though was the Comic Code Authority, because nobody could figure out how to tell a Joker story that made sense with the Comics Code in place. Because, I mean, the Joker disappeared in the 50s, and he didn't come back till whenever they did that one shot. It was like 85 or 86. He was just gone. Because by 85, 86 is when comic publishers started being like, eh, if we keep doing this Comic Code thing, like, we're going to die off. Because they were dying off as a result.
Yeah. Well, you couldn't let the villain win.
Absolutely. So,
how is that a dramatic arc? So weird.
It is so weird. The Comics Code is the worst. I'm glad we don't have that anymore.
Ditto.
Yeah. So, before we started recording, you and I were chit-chatting a little bit.
I told you I had a little therapy on my mind. So I needed some therapy work.
So I want to talk about this. You have something to say about comic book pricing. I feel like we keep coming back to this topic, but I find it so interesting. So I want you to tell me what your beef is with comic book pricing.
I don't know if I have beef with the actual pricing of it. I think I have beef with the fans talking about the pricing of it.
I love it. Continue.
My attitude is, at this point, we're in a democracy. We can I said at this point, I'm not saying in 4 or 5 years, I'm talking 2018.
Fair enough.
Like, you look at movie stars, you look at people that, guess what, Robert Downey Jr., he's getting paid a crap load of money because guess what? People go to his movies, and that's why he can request X amount for this many movie deal. And you look at like authors get paid the same way. The top performing authors get paid the most, and then it just sort of dribbles down. It's not like sports where everybody pretty much gets paid the same, except there's spotlighted people that because of them elevating their game, they're getting paid more than everyone. But really, there's a baseline that people are getting paid. It doesn't fall below this certain baseline because of negotiations.
Sure.
And their union. But why is comics all one price? Pretty much across the board. From a publisher to publisher, sure, it varies a little bit, but not that much. My point is, if the number one book out there, let's say, is, and I have no clue, but let's say it's Tom King Batman.
Number seven.
Why is Tom, let's just say it's number one.
Okay, sure.
Just for argument's sake. Why is Tom King and also all of his creators, his letterer, his colorist, the artist, why are they not getting paid? Not all of a sudden a book hits a certain stratosphere. What was it in the 90s where all of a sudden above and beyond they hit a sales goal, everything above that, they start getting like a bonus for
it. Yeah, residuals. Mm-hmm.
Why wouldn't they either keep that going, which I don't think that's happening really that much, or guess what? The level of sales each publisher has made it where you're not going to get that much of a bonus now. We pretty much know what Batman's going to bring in every month. Mm-hmm. So above and beyond, you're not going to get paid that. But why not, if somebody is bringing in the number one book for a publisher, why isn't that book more expensive as well as the creative team is getting paid more? They're producing a successful product.
Yeah, right.
Like everyone loses their stuff when, guess what? Like, you don't need to buy this unbelievable like Superman issue that's like a huge milestone. And isn't it Detective coming up soon?
Detective 1000 will be next year.
Yeah. Like, everyone complained at like how expensive those books are. And it's like, guess what? They're going to sell. They should be that expensive. People are going to buy. If you don't want to buy them, don't buy them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those like, they should get paid for their demand. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I see your point. And I don't know exactly what the pay structures are within the different publishers. I know some pay more than others by page. Some do have deals where they get a little kickback on things. I think DC does better at that than Marvel. I'm not sure Marvel really does that at all. But, sure.
They probably learned from the 90s.
Well, sure. They've always been like that, right? That's why we got Image Comics, is because they didn't want to do that. Yeah, I don't know. That's a tough question to grapple with, Nick. I'm not sure what the answer is.
And I'm not saying like the number one book should be $9.99. I'm not saying that. But guess what? If it's the number one book in DC or Marvel decide, you know what? Our books, all of our books are $3.99, except for our top 10 books. They're $4.99. And the reason they're $4.99, because we can bring on Joelle Jones, because we can bring on, you know, a certain colorist that's at the top of the game. Who wouldn't want to see, you know, Frank Martin do the colors on Batman? Who wouldn't want to see, you know, Matthew Hollingsworth do the colors, or Todd Klein do the letters? You know, it's like, you're paying for names that people are like, oh, I recognize that. Yeah. You know, if it, going back to Robert Downey Jr., if Robert Downey Jr. didn't make Iron Man as famous as it is, then why wouldn't they just throw any actor in there? Like, right. If it's the suit of armor that makes that a popular movie, I highly doubt it, because of Robert Downey Jr., guess what? The Iron Man comic all of a sudden, and even to this day, still sounds like Robert Downey Jr. speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not Tony Stark.
We'll see if that's still the case. I haven't read the new Tony Stark Iron Man, but Dan Slott's over there now. So, you know, maybe with Bendis gone, they'll change it a little bit.
I'm excited, but Fraction really changed it.
Yeah, Fraction did change it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep, he made it, Robert Downey Jr.
I mean, obviously doing creator-owned work is more profitable for these people if the book does well, right?
Sure.
Like if you have a book at a small indie publisher, we'll just take Scout because they're very small. You know, the amount of comics that Scout can push is going to be a lot smaller than, say, Skybound, right?
Because mm-hmm.
with Skybound, you have the Kirkman connection, so automatically people are looking at your book because you're associated with Kirkman in some way. So you don't have that if you're working for Marvel or DC to some extent, right? Like I'm sure they paid Bendis, well, I know they paid Bendis a ton of money to go over there.
Sure.
It's almost my impression that he was perfectly fine maybe retiring from Marvel and DC was just like, hey, you should come work over here. He's like, yeah, sure. Why not?
Mm.
They're like, all right, how much should we pay you? He's like, I don't know. Throw me a number. And they were like, $50 billion. He's like, all right, I guess I'll be going then, you know?
Do you hear the honk street? Yeah, that's the Brinks truck.
We just backed it up.
But I mean, the reason I'm throwing out like, let's just say top 10 books, they all get bumped up an extra dollar. But if you knew that those were unbelievable writers, artists, colorists, like they are all-star teams, that would be an incentive for you to be like, all right, let me try. Or at least you know, like, DC's backing up the money truck and trying to get the readers to be like, oh, I've never read whatever it is, JLA in 2 years, but it might cost a little bit more, but I do recognize that artist and I do recognize that writer. Well, okay, I'll give that a shot. But like, you're like, you love Moon Knight. If all of a sudden Moon Knight went up into the top 10, bumped up like the money that it would cost to buy Moon Knight, but it is uber popular, it's in the top 10. Not to say that they have to bring in a brand new writer and artist, but guess what? Maybe that writer and artist gets a lot more money to bring the book that was pretty much a C-level book up into the top 10.
Sure.
Like, wouldn't that get the creator out there during con season? Wouldn't that get the creator on their social media really trying to pimp what the hell they're doing? Instead
Absolutely.
Of just letting the Marvel, like, promo machine just like, oh, you can go market that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I hate to say it, I'm reading the new run of Punisher,
mm-hmm.
and it is fantastic.
Don't tell Ronnie.
But, yeah, exactly. But other than the writer, Rosenberg, you know, pimping it out on his, I won't even say pimping it out, trying to get the word out. I don't see Marvel pushing it. I don't see anyone pushing it. And if it was in the top 10, it'd be a little bit easier for Marvel to pump it as well as the writer and artist. And when they're on panels, they're going to be promoting it because they're getting a bump in pay.
Mm-hmm.
And their books are making a lot. I mean, $1 going from $3.99 to $4.99, $4.99 to $5.99, that's a hell of an increase. And I hear a lot of fans like, I'm not going to pay that. How dare them? But guess what? How many of them actually did what they said they were going to do?
Mm-hmm.
How many of them dropped such title? A lot of people are just like, I've been reading it my entire life. I'm not going to stop that.
Yeah.
You know, I know Aaron did on a couple of the titles like that, and good for him. But guess what? When DC releases 52 issues a month, a lot of those, if all of a sudden they had like a pay structure, the top 10 get the best, a lot of those bottom feeders, which might be great titles, don't get me wrong. It's items like that that I absolutely love. But if they're not getting out there and promoting and trying to sell, like get into the top 10, I don't care how good that book is. Sometimes I don't blame DC or Marvel to be like, you know what? We thought people wanted a Ghost Rider book. It ain't really working. We have to pull the plug.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd pull the plug quicker. But that also could put the creative team onto a better book. You don't know. You just don't know.
Yeah, there's a couple issues with that, though. You know, I don't look at the numbers like really hard, but I do check them out to see what's going on. And what I always find is that there's always a couple of books that remain at the top, right? So Batman and Walking Dead are always up there. And
sure.
And those are the only regular comics that stay in the top 10. Everything else that usually makes it there is, for the most part, a brand new number one from Marvel or DC and or an event book from Marvel or DC. And generally, the books that do extremely well are the ones that have a gazillion variant covers. So when I was looking at the May numbers, Amazing Spider-Man 800 did like 411,000 copies. but they also had like 40 or 50 variants.
Mm-hmm.
So of course it's going to sell that many copies because retailers are making money on the back end, selling the variants, not the actual issues.
That's just like pushing out 2 issues a month.
Yeah.
It pads those numbers. And I totally get it, but I'm not talking top 10 overall. I'm talking Marvel's top 10, DC's top 10.
Oh, I gotcha. Yeah, I gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
The cream should rise to the top.
Sure.
It should be not the most popular, but the best titles. Those creators should be rewarded.
Well, and it should be best titles, not generally best performing titles either, right? So like if you're a writer at DC and you know that your pay scale would change based on how much your book is selling, well obviously Tom King doing Batman is going to be making a lot more money than you because he's doing Batman, right? Mm-hmm. And that's always a top seller. But what about you can even look at Man of Steel. Man of Steel was, I think, in the top 20, but it didn't even break 80,000 copies, right? And mm-hmm. that's Bendis doing it, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it really should go by talent. And I think usually they'll put their best talent on books that they feel should be selling the best, right? So generally the Trinity over at DC. And then at Marvel, it'd be like Avengers, Captain America, things like that. It used to be X-Men.
Mutants.
Yeah, well, it used to be X-Men. Mm-hmm. It's really not that anymore because of the whole Fox thing. We should talk about that on Nerd Legion, by the way, because there's some interesting developments.
Sure.
But, you know, it used to be X-Men, and it's not that anymore, you know? And you have books coming out of nowhere, like Doctor Strange. Who would have thought Doctor Strange would be selling anything?
Right.
That was a D-lister since the beginning.
But that sort of backs up my point, though. How did a D-lister become a popular selling title? It wasn't for multiple, like, all the multiple covers and putting out 2 books a month. That really is just artificially inflating the titles. I'm not saying that. The reason Doctor Strange became a popular title was the creative team.
Mm-hmm.
People, guess what? Jason Aaron has a name.
Oh, yeah.
And he also has quite a few followers that will blindly buy, I won't say buy everything, but they'll at least try the first couple issues, probably way beyond just one issue, probably a full arc. Just to see, am I interested in his take on Doctor Strange?
Mm-hmm.
But that's how that. Why do you think like Chris Bacalo would have went with a D-list writer to do Doctor Strange? Probably not.
Right.
He was like, oh yeah, Jason Aaron. He's popular. I'm going with him.
Yep.
But like people like that should be rewarded. It's supply and demand.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why I just don't understand when fans are like, what? Doctor Strange? Oh, that's a D-list character and you're going to charge me a dollar more? It's like, yeah, because Jason Aaron and Chris Bacalo's on it.
Yeah.
With fabulous, isn't it like Lauren Martin covers?
Yep.
Colors?
Yep.
Yeah. It's like, why? Yes. That, of course you're going to sign up for that book. It's like, oh.
Mm-hmm.
That's why that's why Image makes sense. Image tries to put together, like all the creators have a piece of that pie that they want to increase the size of that pie for themselves. So guess what? If I'm a writer, I want a damn good colorist and I want a damn good artist to rock this out. I'm not bringing on like, oh, I have this friend from college. Like, you're not doing that. You want a big ass piece of that pie.
Well, I mean, that does happen sometimes.
Of course it does. I'm talking generality. I'm not talking specific.
Yeah, but even when it does, though, it happens for good reason, right? So like Mitch mm-hmm. Gerards, that does Mr. Miracle. He was brought on because he and Tom had a good relationship and they did, what was the book that they did in the Middle East? The Sheriff of Babylon.
Yes.
They did Sheriff of Babylon together and really enjoyed working with each other. And Mitch had never done big 2 books before. And, you know, Tom got this book, this idea from Mr. Miracle. He's like, oh, I know this guy. He's pretty good. You should check him out. You know what I mean? But I see your point though. And usually a lot of the books that do really well are by bigger name writers and artists. And of course they should be because they have names attached.
I'm not poo pooing like Tom Brevoort or like executives at any of the big 2 that are trying to put dream team creators together. Cause I think they do a good job of trying to combine up. I would have never thought Chris Bacalo and Jason Aaron. I would have never put those two styles together, but holy cow, did that work well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see if a dollar increasing the price of a cover just on, like I said, 10 covers, the top 10 books that are selling, increase that dollar, what would be the change with the creators? Because who would want to fall out of the top 10?
Mm-hmm.
You're making how much percentage wise? You're making how much more per issue? Like, they would be out there. They would be cheerleading for that book like you wouldn't believe.
Mm-hmm.
I guarantee you, even Warren Ellis would be out there cheerleading for his book if he knew he was in that top 10 and earning X amount extra.
Right, right, right.
I don't know. Like I said, that's the thing that drives me crazy when people are like, it's a dollar more. What the hell? Like, hey, I'm not opposed if you want to, like, the bottom 25 books of a publisher, if they want to mark those and put them on, you know, cheaper paper and put the price at like $1.99 just to see if there's going to be movement. I would love to see that. But it just seems like experiments like that, they've tried to lower prices. And guess what? Those books just, they don't move. Yep. For whatever reason, they just don't move. People are fixated on exactly what they want.
You got to think, too, a lot of the higher selling books are pretty much subsidizing the lowest selling books, right?
For sure.
You know, every publisher has a number where they'll kind of cut off bringing out a book. And obviously for Marvel and DC, it's a lot higher number. Usually, like, if a book falls below 25,000, you're guaranteed it's going to be canceled within a couple months. It's not always the case. There have been some exceptions. Like when Midnighter was coming out, that book was only doing like 17,000-18,000 copies, but everyone loved the hell out of it. And so they just kept it going. Not for very long, but they kept it going. They allowed the story to finish.
Yeah. I didn't see a lot of people hollering for the Wildstorm, but guess what? You have a big name talents doing that book. I don't know how it's selling. I listen to a lot of comic podcasts. Other than Nerdy Legion talking about it, I don't hear a lot of people talking about the Wildstorm. But I loved them taking a chance, because guess what? It's Warren Ellis writing that.
Yep.
You know, you take a chance on Garth Ennis writing a war book or writing a Punisher book. And you take, you know, you roll the dice on that and you hope it's a huge hit.
Well, I'll give you the number. The Wildstorm number 13 in May sold 14,661 copies, which is right below Batgirl and the Girls of Birds of Prey, which was just canceled, and Batwoman, which also was just canceled.
I was going to say that's a far cry from 80,000.
Of course. But you know what? Yeah. You know, we were talking about backing up the Brainstruck to Bendis.
But
there's got to be similar deal there with Warren Ellis.
I was going to say, can I also ask you, what is the draw for a reader? The Wildstorm universe or Warren Ellis doing X book?
Absolutely. Right.
I would think that he's bringing in on the low end 10,000 of those copies sold.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe Wildstorm might have 4,000, maybe. Like Warren Ellis, I could see him bumping up the Batwoman book that you just referenced. Mm-hmm. Like, he could bring on 10,000. You want to bump a 10,000 readers? Yeah, bring Warren Ellis on. Let him write it. But that is name recognition. Just like right now with Tom King. Tom King could write a Batgirl book or write a Moon Knight book, and he's going to bring X amount of readers to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure DC was hoping Bendis would do the same thing with Superman.
Yeah. And he might. We don't know that yet, right? Because they're still in that miniseries thing. They haven't relaunched Superman yet.
Right.
So it could be that whenever it launches. The interesting thing, though, that I was not aware is I heard somewhere that part of the reason why Man of Steel isn't selling many more copies is that Bendis did not allow DC to do variant covers.
Wow, really?
Yeah. He's like, A cover, B cover, that's fine, but don't do like this crazy stuff like the 1 in 5 million Jim Lee variant and this, that, and the other. Like, I don't want any of that.
Wow. Kudos to him.
Absolutely.
I thought he would just be like, yeah, every creator wants to do a cover for that. Yep. Let's go. Wow. That's good news to hear.
Yeah.
It's not as crazy as Mark Miller with the, I refuse to do a second printing of my book that just sold out. Like, I have no idea what the hell he's doing.
Well, you know what? It worked, because from my understanding, it's going to be the highest selling indie title of any publisher since 1998.
And I don't doubt that, because every comic book store is fearful that they're going to run out. And guess what? Johnny's going to just jump online and buy it there.
Mm-hmm. By the way, piece of trivia. Oh. Do you know what the current highest selling indie book of all time is?
Indie book?
Yes.
Well, would it be Walking Dead?
It is not The Walking Dead.
Wow.
Not The Walking Dead. So,
wow.
Magic Order is the highest selling since 98. So that should give you a time frame. You have to look back to the year 1998.
The Authority?
It is not. The highest selling indie book of all time is Fathom number 1.
Whoa. Old Michael Turner.
Old Michael Turner.
Dang.
Yep. And that book's still going, by the way. They're, I think it launches this week or next week. I'd have to look again. But yeah, volume 7's coming out.
There were plenty of teenage boys that loved that cheesecake, so.
Oh, dude, I was all over that. I was all over Fathom. And, you know, that was during the high times of Wizard Magazine. And Fathom was all over that, too. They were doing the mini comics. They were doing the cards, everything. It was awesome.
I miss Wizard Magazine.
Oh, Wizard was the best, dude. I really loved it.
I mean, I hate to say it. If I saw those in, like, dollar bins, I would be buying those up left and right.
Paul sent me a bunch of them, like, a year or two ago. I've got a bunch in my closet. Nice.
I would. Those are perfect toilet reads.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't opened them since he sent them to me, but, yeah. Matter of fact, I think I mentioned it on the podcast, like, a week or two ago, that DC Nation book that DC's doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Zero Issue had those three stories, right? They had the, what was it? Justice League, the Superman
and
Batman.
Batman.
The book is not like that at all. Issue 1 came out like a week or two ago. And dude, if it's not fucking Wizard Magazine.
Whoa.
I was like,
are they copying that Image magazine that Image puts out?
Yeah, sort of. I don't think Image is doing it anymore.
Cause boy, that was really wizard-like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like better than remember Comic Scene?
Yeah, Comic Scene was great.
Yeah, except then it went way Hollywood-y.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
I miss them.
Yeah. DC Nation's great. You should check that out. I mean, obviously it's DC-centric, but I was flipping through it and reading stuff and I was like, man, this brings me back.
Okay. Let me ask you this regarding DC Nation. What's the price point?
Oh God, it's like a dollar or two.
I'll tell you what it should be. It should be free.
Well, it should be free.
But if they charge more than $1 or $1.50, they are talking out of their butt because they want all these new readers. But then they're doing this pretty much a promo package, because that's what Wizard was.
Oh yeah,
a promo package for their comics, for their comic lines. And yet you want to charge people, like, if it's $1.99 or $2.99, that's way too much money.
All right, so I was wrong. DC Nation number 0 is 25 cents because it came out on Free Comic Book Day.
Yep.
DC Nation.
Free on Comixology.
Free on Comixology. DC Nation is $4.99.
$4.99? What? Oh, my God. I'm going to lose it on your podcast.
Oh, wait. Is that? What? No, wait. That's not the same one. Oh, God. Maybe I should have just pulled out my damn pull list and looked it up that way. You know what? Let me just do that.
Please tell me that they have original stories in there.
There was no original stories. It was all interviews and like character sketches and stuff like that.
$5.
What?
Oh, my God.
What's wrong? You don't like that?
Oh, it's a shill. It's an infomercial for their line. How that is shame on you. Hey, this is your title for this episode. Shame on you, DC Comics. What the F? Even $3.99. I mean, come on, fellas. That is effing ridiculous. Wow. Wow. Unbelievable.
I'm looking. I don't know, dude. I can't find the damn print one. They're free on Comixology.
All right. Well, I'll get them through Comixology. How about that?
Yeah, they're free on Comixology.
they should be under 99 cents, because I think Comixology, if anything is under 99 cents, they can't charge anything.
Yeah,
for
that
it.
That makes sense.
But if it was $4.99, shame on you. Just shame on you. And even if it was a 20-page interview with Warren Ellis, and you know I love me some Warren Ellis, or Grant Morrison, you know I love some Grant Morrison, shame on you. Disgusting.
Yeah, there might be a book or two. I don't know. Somebody that gets the print books, let me know.
Good God.
Dude, all right, look.
That's like you going to your local comic book store, and let's say your pull list is, let's even go under what a lot of people's are. Let's say it's 10 books a month. If your local comic book store has the gall to charge you for previews, what the F? I am giving you, let's say, $4 an issue. I'm giving you $40, $50 a month. If not, like, I'm buying statues, I'm buying trades, I'm buying, who the hell knows, trading cards. I'm at least spending $50 a month in your store, and you're going to charge me for previews that, hey, guess what? Me going through previews will only make me spend more money in your store. Mm-hmm. And yet you have the gall to be like, all these people go into digital. How dare they? It's like, well, how dare you ask me to spend money on something that will only bring your store more money? Like, oh my God. Ridiculous.
Uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh. Well, I got to tell you, though, a lot of shops do charge for previews.
I do. I was listening to Best of the Rest, and they were talking about how much I think Jay gets charged, not cover price, but he gets charged a couple bucks for previews.
Yep.
And I almost flipped my wig. I was like, are you freaking kidding me?
Yep.
Wow. Unreal.
Unreal. Yeah, it should be free. You're right. Especially if you can just go to their previews website and look it up that way. You know, or like the DCBS website or Comic List or the million other places you can go.
I mean, I have a fantastic local comic book store. And when Free Comic Book Day rolls around, all they want are people in costumes, and they want families coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And they offer free comic books to people. I'm sure there's a limit, probably like 3 to 5 issue limit per person. But the majority of comic book stores, what do you ever hear about Free Comic Book Day? It's like the brick and mortar stores bitching that they have to offer free comic books to get people in.
We have to
pay for them. Wah, wah, wah. But then I hear how many stores are like 2-book limit, 1-book limit.
It's
well, what the hell? Like, and I'm sure you're not getting charged $2.99 or $3.99. Yeah. I'm sure DC and Marvel are cutting you a pretty big discount, but it's never in a positive light. Well, it's not like these books are free. You guys, when you come in, you really should be buying stuff. Wah, wah, wah.
I can't disagree with that, though.
But don't have Free Comic Book Day then. Like, sure. If all you're looking at is the negativity instead of bringing in new readers, don't offer them.
Sure.
People, I guarantee you, people will go elsewhere. I won't go to my local comic book store during Free Comic Book Day. Why? Because I hate crowds.
Mm-hmm.
But guess what? They do it right, and you know what? They have a freaking crowd there, and those people are not just walking out with free comic books, they're buying stuff.
It's an event. Which store do you go to? Do you go to Challengers?
No, I go to Amazing Fantasy Books.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, they have like 6 locations, and they're all just as friendly, and they all make a huge positive day out of it.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, you guys are lucky because you got a ton of shops out there. You got was it Graham Cracker? You got Challengers. You got What else is over there?
I'll be honest with you. You just named off all of the comic book stores I've ever been to.
You know what's sad is the fact that I know comic book stores in places I don't live.
You probably go on bought comics from Graham Cracker.
Oh yeah! Like, oh hell yeah!
They have a presence.
They've got some great variant covers too.
But I went from Graham Crackers was my first. Then when I moved downtown, I went to Challengers. And then when I moved out to the suburbs, the south suburbs with my wife, I went to AF, and I actually met the manager. We both were going to college together. We were in the same class, and she remarked like, oh, you like – and, you know, I had a comic book shirt on.
Hmm.
And I was like, yeah. And she's like, oh, I manage a comic book store out in Frankfort, Illinois.
Nice.
Yeah. So, and I mean, all of those shops, those three shops, they're all fantastic. Like you graham crackers. And I know I've told you this before, when I told you, oh, a shop around here, they would offer entire run and they would stick the entire run in like a magazine bag. And it would just be like 40 issues, cover price X, and then slash through it. And then like 80% off. So it'd be like, instead of $40, it would be $8. Mm-hmm. And that's how I got my first run of Moon Knight.
Oh, nice.
With Munch. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. But I mean, that's why I took a risk on something like that, because they were offering it 60% off and it was the complete run.
Hell yeah.
It wasn't in the best condition because guess what? It was all jammed into a, you know, magazine bag. But dude, it's 60% off. And I mean, look at the cover, look at the artist, and look at the writer. Done.
I'd love to do a comic store tour in Chicago. I think that'd be fun.
Oh, that would. And you know what they do for E2E2? And I brought this up to the boys. A lot of comic book stores in Chicago will have trolleys going back and forth to C2E2.
Oh, no kidding.
That's why I told everyone, if you're, you know, doing Airbnb, guess what? Find out what local comic book store, like Graham Crackers and Challengers, they had like multiple trolleys going. And I'm like, then you have a comic book store you can go to. You're off the beaten path.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be so close to it. Who cares? And you're off the beaten path, so the Airbnb, you'd probably get a lot more bang for your buck, and it would be cheaper.
Absolutely.
As well as all of those neighborhood restaurants around you, too.
Mm-hmm.
So just a thought for next year, possibly.
Yeah, I think that'd be a good one for next year. Maybe I'll come in like a day earlier and do that.
Yeah. Oh, and also, you didn't see this last year, but this year, when you're walking, before you walk over that overpass to go into the convention center, they had signs up that would say like Graham Crackers, Lincoln Avenue. And all you did was line up behind a sign and then people would be like, okay, your bus is here. Go.
Oh, okay.
Like it was really organized.
Huh. Wow.
So you don't have to sit outside if it was raining or whatever.
Impressive.
Yeah. They had that down and it was a free shuttle. You know, it's like, that's the type of stuff. And guess what? It gets people going to your local comic book store, going to a convention, checking out those prices, and maybe going back to that comic book store to be like, I saw it cheaper there. I'll buy it there. Well,
yep.
Smart.
Yep. Nick Wetmore, it is now time for you to join and partake in a Thursday tradition, the Trivia Challenge.
Uh-oh.
Are you ready for this challenge?
Is there a theme to this challenge?
As a matter of fact, there is, because as I am very well aware, you are neck deep in Clone Saga.
Oh, God.
So I've decided to do a little Spider-Man trivia for you.
Oh, no.
Oh,
be
yes.
Gentle.
Oh, yes. I know you love Spidey. I think you'll do just fine.
I love Spidey, but there's a lot of holes in my Spidey.
It's fine. You'll be fine. Don't you worry. Are you ready?
I am.
In what year did Spider-Man get published?
What year? Holy guacamole.
Now, I try to be very fair with all my questions, so if you don't know, you can ask for a hint, and I will give you multiple choices that you can choose from.
Hmm. Are you talking Amazing Fantasy or Spider-Man 1?
I mean, I'll let you decide.
I don't know. I thought you'd limit it. Or you'd be giving multiple guesses. Or are you talking the Tobey Maguire movie?
No. We are talking comics.
Okay, that's good.
How about this? Well, I'll make it easier.
No.
We'll do Amazing Fantasy.
Amazing Fantasy.
If you don't know and you want to go with Amazing Spider-Man number one, I will also allow that because they are different years.
No. Of course they are, but I am horrible on dates. I was going to say late 60s, but I know Spider-Man also had a lot of hippy-dippy issues that I've checked out. So it can't be late 60s. 65? No.
Would you like some choices?
No. I'm just going to hazard a guess.
Okay.
64.
You are so close, Nick Wetmore.
64.
Amazing Fantasy number 15 was published in 1962, And then Amazing Spider-Man number 1 was published in 1963.
Ah! The first thought was 68, but I'm like, no, there were a lot of hippy-dippy issues. So I'm like, no. Those hit around like the 20s.
Yeah, you were probably thinking FF. I think, wasn't FF 64? I think FF was 64.
That sounds right.
All right, next question. This is a food-related question since listeners of us on the Nerd Legion podcast know we love food.
Ooh.
What does Peter Parker love to eat for breakfast?
For breakfast? Spider-Man Pop-Tarts.
That is incorrect. In fact, the right answer is wheat cakes.
Oh, that's right. I even watched somebody on YouTube do Spider-Man wheat cakes.
Did they?
Because I guess there was a recipe somebody wrote to the letter of the editor, and I guess they published a recipe for Spider-Man wheat cakes in the letter column. Oh, that's too funny.
Yep, wheat cakes. I should post a picture of the panel so you can see it. It's pretty funny. All right, next question. We all know Spidey is a big hit with the ladies, but which one of these ladies was Spider-Man's first girlfriend? Is it Mary Jane Watson? Is it Black Cat? Or is it Gwen Stacy?
I thought he was, quote unquote, hanging out with Betty Brant.
Oh my God, you're going to get like 100 bonus points for that.
Am I right or wrong?
You are absolutely correct.
I don't know if they ever dated, because then Ned Leeds came and then they specifically said that they went out on a date.
No, they definitely dated.
Okay. Man. I just didn't know if they specifically said that.
I'm going to give you 100 bonus points for that, for the simple fact that this is a trick question and I didn't even give you a none of the above.
Dang.
That is good. Nick Wetmore, you are a master of trivia. Let's continue.
Uh-oh.
Spider-Man fought a lot of deadly supervillains over the years, but who was the very first supervillain Spider-Man fought? And I'll be happy to give you some choices if you'd like.
Yeah, I'll hear the choices. I like the choices.
Here are your choices. Dr. Octopus, the Chameleon, Vulture, or Kraven the Hunter.
Dang, those are all good choices.
They are. I love this issue, by the way.
Good God. And, you know, I've been going back and reading the Masterworks, and I think I'm up to volume 7. Huh. I'm going to say, oh, man, and it's like they all sort of glom together in my head. I'm going to say Doc Ock.
Oh, Doc Ock is incorrect. The correct answer is the Chameleon in Amazing Spider-Man number 1.
Oh, mm-hmm. That is right. Yeah.
In fact, the order for these, if I'm not mistaken, and Spider-Man fans can correct me at GeekVine on Twitter, it's Chameleon, then Vulture was like Amazing Spider-Man 6 or 7, and then Doc Ock, and the last one is Kraven.
Oh, that's so good.
All right.
Yeah, I know Chameleon was in quite a few.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and like the first 50 issues, he was all over the place. It was perfect for Stan to, oh, I'm going to make him into a psychiatrist. I'm going to make him into so-and-so. God.
All right, multiple choice. When Spider-Man first fought the Green Goblin, what was the Green Goblin's signature mode of transportation? Was it the Goblin Mobile? Was it a broomstick, a glider, or a city bus?
I hope it's a Goblin Mobile, but I'll go with the glider.
Ah, that is a trick question. It is not, in fact, the glider.
Dang it.
No, did he kidding. Take a bus? I'm just kidding.
It'd be great if he took a bus.
Oh, that would be amazing. Awesome. That would be amazing. I would have loved it if it was a broomstick, actually. that would be my favorite. Wait. Judges say it is a broomstick.
Ooh.
In fact, I just found an image of said broomstick.
I like it.
You know what? I'm going to give you the glider because this broomstick looks like a cross between a rocket and a glider. All right, on to the next question. We all know Peter Parker used to wear glasses, but why did Peter Parker stop wearing his glasses? Is it because he lost them? He wanted to be cool? Someone stole them? And someone broke them?
I will go with broke them.
That is the correct answer. Bonus points if you know who broke them.
Was it Flash?
Correct.
Yeah, Flash was all over Peter early on.
He was all over Peter.
And then he went away into the service.
Yes.
And he came back decorated.
He did. When Spider-Man was a wrestler, what was the name of the champion wrestler who fought Spider-Man in the ring?
Are you going to give me the Macho Man Randy Savage name?
I can give you some choices. Is it Crusher Hogan, the Masked Marvel, the Pile Driver, or Bonesaw?
Oh, it's so hard not to go with Bonesaw. That's a good one.
That is a good one.
I so want it to be Crusher Hogan.
That is correct.
Yes.
That's a good one.
Yeah, that's a great name.
Back in the day, the people of New York and J. Jonah Jameson called Spider-Man a menace, which made him open season for other superheroes. Which superhero fought Spider-Man the most? Is it the Human Torch, the Punisher, Captain America, or Iron Man?
It has to be Mr. Flame on Human Torch.
That is correct. Of course, they live like three blocks from each other.
Oh, they fought in so many issues. And then Johnny thought that Spider-Man was hitting on his girl, so that made him fight even more. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best issues is when Human Torch followed Spider-Man to Hollywood and then interrupted a film set that Spider-Man was filming on.
Oh, God.
let me tell you, it was Mysterio who was behind it, of course.
Of course it was.
Mm-hmm.
Of course it was. Talk about tropes.
Yeah.
J. Jonah Jameson always hated Spider-Man. One day, J. Jonah Jameson decided to pay Dr. Hartley Stillwell to help him create somebody who could defeat Spider-Man. But what J. Jonah Jameson created was a supervillain. Who was the supervillain that J. Jonah Jameson created? This is, by the way, one of my favorite Spider-Man the Animated Series episodes.
Oh. Oh, good God. I'm bad with names, but I do remember J. Jonah Jameson paying a doctor to build the Spider Slayer.
Oh, how could we forget the Spider Slayer? Unfortunately, that's not the right answer.
Yeah, I also was going to go with something else.
All right, yes. Let's go with something else. I'll pretend I didn't
hear
it.
No, no, no. It could totally be wrong, so give me the real answer.
The correct answer is the Scorpion.
Dang it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all right. That happened before Spider Slayer.
I'll give you an easy one. Name Peter Parker's parents.
Dang Peter Parker's parents. Dude, I don't believe in this whole parents crapola. I am all May and Ben. That was his parents. I don't believe in any of this parent crap. Sorry. They tried to shoehorn that stuff in. Nope, not doing it.
All right, you know what?
Not doing it at all.
I will give you 10 bonus points for a correct answer, also in my mind, that his parents don't matter. The right answer is Richard and Mary Parker, though.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, screw those guys.
Which seemed very perfect names for relating to Peter's past.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's sort of like the Superman double letters, Lois Lane, and yeah. You know, it's like, yeah, 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 okay.
Yeah. All right, next question. How did Spider-Man get his black suit?
Oh, like Secret Wars? Are we talking?
You tell me.
Yeah. Yeah, he got it through an alien symbiote on Secret Wars. Was it issue 8 or something?
Yep, on Battle World.
There you go.
That's correct. I would have also accepted in the shower.
Yeah.
Why not? I mean, they got a shower, right? They're in Battle World. They have to shower mm-hmm. after they fight.
They have to, of course.
In Amazing Spider-Man Annual number 3, Spider-Man was offered to join the Avengers. But by the end of the comic, Spider-Man ultimately did not want to join. What was the reason? And here's your choices.
Ooh.
The Avengers made fun of him. He was too young. The Avengers gave Spider-Man a task, and Spider-Man did not complete it. He wanted to join the Fantastic Four.
Let's go with they made fun of him.
You know, I want to accept that, but that is not the correct answer.
Dang it.
He was given a task and did not complete it. The task was to bring the Hulk back to the Avengers, but after Spider-Man fought the Hulk, he thought the Avengers were going to lock him up, so Spider-Man didn't want to bring the Hulk back, which made Spider-Man not want to join. That Hulk always causing trouble.
Oh, always.
Always. Did you read the new book, by the way?
Oh, yeah.
What is it? Immortal Hulk?
Yeah, Immortal Hulk. Yes. That was fantastic.
It was a goodie.
Mm-hmm.
We all know Spider-Man married Mary J. Watson. I mean, I'm sure there's people that don't know that, but we'll continue. How many times did Peter Parker propose to Mary Jane?
Yikers. How many times?
How many times did he propose to Mary Jane?
Johnny Christmas. I couldn't even hazard a guess on that. I'm not up to that point. This is one of my black holes.
Just give me a guess. One, two, three, or four?
Let's go three.
Oh, man. Nick, don't you know the old saying, third time's the charm? He asked her twice, and she said no. But on the third time, she's like, you know what? I love you, Peter. Yes, I will marry you.
Yeah, that is a black hole, my friend.
All right, next question. Spider-Man has a great family, but does Spider-Man have any siblings?
Ooh. Other than siblings that got retconned, is that what you meant?
I mean, they're always retconned, right? Just like his parents.
Yeah. Can we include clones as well? Because if that's the case, then he would have five. And he also had one child that was retconned out.
Let's not go with clones. We'll go with straight up siblings who also had Richard and Mary as parents.
No, this is another black hole. If you say more than zero, I will have to go and read these issues because that is bizarre.
Okay. Well, the answer is one. Her name is Teresa Parker. She was a CIA agent, just like Richard and Mary Parker were. She was also an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
When was this?
You can check that out in Amazing Spider-Man Family Business number 1 from June 2014.
Okay, so that's brand new.
Yeah, it's pretty recent.
Well, 4 years old.
It's pretty recent. So I'll accept the fact that you did not know it.
Was she in Spider-Verse?
No.
Okay.
I'd remember that.
All right, just
Spider-Verse was great.
It was.
In Civil War, which team did Spider-Man join? Team Captain America, Team Iron Man, both teams, on neither team?
He was on both teams.
That is correct.
Yeah. I wanted to jump into Iron Man, but then I'm like, no. I remember him talking to Captain America.
Yep. Well, so he originally joined Iron Man's team. That's when he got the Iron Spider suit, which is freaking awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, man, this Tony Stark guy, he's kind of a douche. I'm going to go hang out with the Cap. That's pretty much the way it went. All right. Next question. Let's skip that one. All right, let's do this one. In 2012, Spider-Man was killed by which supervillain? And this might be a hole for you, but you should know this because it gave us one of the greatest Spider-Man comics of all time.
Ooh, that's high praise. Let's say Doc Ock and Superior Spider-Man.
You are correct, and I'm glad that we are in agreement that it is the best Spider-Man ever. All right, we have...
Hey, I got news for you. We are in agreement.
Yeah, you're damn right we are.
And that is a classic Dan Slott run that a lot of people... Remember the big hoo-ha? I mean, that was up there with Captain America being a Nazi. And guess what? How many people turned around on that? Everyone did a 180 on that book.
Mm-hmm.
Just like Red Hulk. When that happened, everybody was freaking out about Red Hulk. And then they did a 180 on that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, love it. Now I want to go back and read it again.
This one you already know the answer to. How many clones does Spider-Man have?
Should I guess five?
I mean, that's a pretty good guess.
I'll guess five.
That's a pretty good answer. I'll accept that. Why does Spider-Man hate the George Washington Bridge?
Is that the bridge Gwen Stacy got knocked off?
That is correct. Also, the beginning of the modern age of comics, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the cutoff between Silver Age and Copper Age or Bronze Age, whatever they call it. Good issue, by the way. Good issue.
Yeah.
Isn't that Rob's favorite issue, isn't it? Rob Krieger?
That sounds right.
Pretty sure it is. Rob, correct me if I'm wrong. Final question. Spider-Man has fought many superheroes, but who was the first DC superhero Spider-Man fought?
Ooh. Would it be Superman?
That's correct.
I remember those big, what was it, Treasury editions?
Mm-hmm. Superman versus the Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah, he's hanging off like the Empire State Building or something.
Yep.
Yeah, pretty crazy.
Good stuff. Don't you wish they still did Marvel DC stuff like that?
Yeah, I just remarked about it 2 days ago to Chris Campbell.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That dying for that.
It's not going
to
happen.
And now can I ask you to create a list for me before we head out?
Sure.
And this is related to Spider-Man.
Oh, boy.
Tell me your top five, in no particular order, top five Spider-Man artists.
Oh, my God. Oh,
I can give you mine.
All right. I can give you some.
Okay, go ahead.
Romita Sr., yes. McFarlane.
Ooh, okay.
Sarah Pacelli.
Mm-hmm.
Umberto Ramos.
Mm.
How many is that? Four? I got to think of another one. I'll just put Ditko on there because I don't even know where else to pick. Oh, Stuart Immonen. There we go. That's what I'll pick for number five.
Ooh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I like that. Mine is no particular order. Ditko, Marcos Martin.
Good one.
Ross Andrew, JR Sr., and then either DeFalco or Sal Buscema.
I like it. I like it. DeFalco's great. I like DeFalco writing more than drawing.
Mm-hmm. Ditto.
DeFalco is fantastic.
Yeah, I grew up with Andrew, so reading that, he just created a darn near perfect Spider-Man. But Marcos Martin is like a modern, when he does Spider-Man, which I think he's doing an issue coming up.
Is he?
He at least does the cover.
Oh, wait, did he do 801?
That sounds right.
Yeah, they've got Umberto Ramos doing covers right now.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
We'll see when they relaunch the book.
He reminds me so much of Ditko.
Yeah, I agree.
He is channeling.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So, they've got a
good list.
They got the guy from Invincible taking over in that book.
Otley.
Ryan Otley's going to do the art when Nick Spencer takes over.
Oh, shoot. That's an interesting team.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Otley can draw superheroes. He's proven that.
Hell yeah. I always thought that Invincible had a little Spider-Man vibe to it.
For sure.
So I could
especially
see
the early couple trades.
Mm-hmm,
there was
a
lot. There was more Peter Parker than Spider-Man, but yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. All right, Nick, when I tally up your score, you have won this week's challenge with 337 points. Congratulations.
Wow. Wow, I'll take it.
Congratulations. Of course, you can find Nick on Twitter at Nick Wetmore. Did I say Nick or Neek? Nick Wetmore.
I like Neek. Hello, Neek.
Hello. Hello, governor. if you enjoyed this chat, then be sure to check Nick and I on the Nerdy Legion podcast coming at you mostly weekly. And matter of fact, the day that this is coming out, we have a new episode in which we talk about my Heroes Con experience. So you can check that out. And I believe,
two for Thursday.
I believe you and I are about to record another episode of that podcast that'll be out next week.
Nice.
Yeah. You can, of course, find me on Twitter at Geekvine. You can email nerdylegion@gmail.com. Be sure to leave those reviews wherever you're at. Or even better, share the podcast with your friends so the podcast can keep on growing. And as Nick would say, it would really please my ego if you did that.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Top 5.